Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stand back. There's a hurricane coming through.
Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com with us for the rest of the hour on Robbie and Rex Road. We welcome your Titans questions at 615-737-1025. PK, fresh off a trip to Phoenix for the NFL owners meetings going on out there. Robert Saleh speaking yesterday. Mike Borgonzi speaking on Monday. PK, you were there for both of them. I've said this before. I think Borgonzi in particular has mastered the art of what I've seen a lot of general managers master, which is saying a lot, but not really saying that much at all. What's kind of the maybe one or two overarching takeaways that you have from Borgonzi and Saleh out in Arizona the last couple of days?
Yeah, Borgonzi did a good job of not saying a ton. I thought the most telling thing from him was this idea that, hey, if two rookie offensive linemen turn out to be the best options we have, there would be no hesitation for the Titans to have a rookie center and a rookie right guard. And somehow, as I don't think this market, and certainly the three of us, and certainly I, have not consciously gotten away from offensive line talk, but maybe there is a little offensive line fatigue. They've addressed a lot of other things. We've paid a lot of attention to other positions where they have holes, and we've let them slide for a little while on the offensive line. They've moved from maybe more tackle problems now to interior problems. I mean, if offensive line is a big issue for this team again, and it has been so for quite some time now, it's really going to be, you know, and Joe hates when I talk DNA, but this would be a third regime that has these extensive problems and thinks it can fix it, you know, in now another way, you know. I mean, even the same regime went out and spent $22 million a year on Dan Moore, who's not good. They know what they have, average at best there. They're a year away from needing to fix that. And so in 2 years, they're going to need to fix three-fifths of this line. May the best man win. Saleh says the guys who are in have the lead by being in. You know, it's got the potential to be a real mess. Training camp battles aren't what they once were, you know, so it's going to be a talent thing. And I think hoping for Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith is prayerful. So that's the biggest one from Borgonzi to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like even like you said, the competition's not the same that they used to be. I mean, it's like practice time. All that stuff has been cut down, and that's, you know, the players, you know, that's in the CBA and things like that. But that has made it a lot more difficult, right? For it's the competition, but just even like offensive line young player development has been stunted somewhat by that.
You've got to be, I mean, all that said, it's the same everywhere around the league, and so you let them compete at what they can compete at and pick the best one. The feeling I got in talking to some people around the league is, you know, there are interior offensive linemen, you know, that they have in the middle rounds, and Borgonzi said this, other people kind of confirmed it, they have like warts, so to speak, but not warts that make them unplayable. You can plug and play the right, if you find the right guy, you can plug and play him. He's going to have a deficiency the same way a fourth round whatever is going to have a deficiency. Doesn't make him unplayable. Now, do you want it in the guy who's giving the ball to Cam every snap? It's less than ideal place maybe to have it. And you want that guy to be setting protections in a way that takes things away from Cam. So now you want a really smart guy. Then Connor Liu, one of the best guys, is coming off an ACL tear. So that's got to downgrade his value a little bit. And he's not ready for the beginning of the season. And the first year off an ACL isn't the same and all of that. But this is a primo position of need. I think you've got to take one of them first three rounds, first four rounds for sure, which then again knocks out a potential edge rusher, a potential wide receiver, a potential corner. I think also reestablished, they need nickel options because Alante Taylor's not playing nickel. And so they've got, you know, a nickel corner in Marcus Harris, and their big nickel will be their third safety, and it will not be Kevin Winston, who is locked in at safety. And so that's Tony Adams. You're comfortable with either of those guys? They need competition at least for those guys. So put that back on the list or reemphasize that on a draft list. So interior offensive line, you probably need two. Nickel, you need at least one, maybe two. And that's added to the list that we already had of receiver and whatever. And another thing I think that was big from Borgonzi, he does not like, he was pretty candid about this, doesn't like running backs beyond Love in this draft, doesn't think much of the group. So you're talking about a room that either adds Jeremiah Love or probably stays the same, which is pretty drastic difference.
That's a pretty drastic difference. And I did find it interesting. We talked about this to begin the show. I thought, you know, obviously, I was not there. I watched the Saleh press conference in its entirety. You were there for both of them, and you were with Borgonzi. It felt like to me both of them at different points, I don't know if went out of their way is the right way to characterize it, but brought up kind of unprompted the running back room and how much they like the current running back room as is. Like, I think Saleh said yesterday that he thinks it's one of the top rooms in the league or something like that. One of the better rooms in the league is the way that he phrased it, which I agree. I think that's a pretty strong statement, but
Do you mean personality?
Am I reading too much into, you know, how much they're kind of talking up their current running back room?
Well, the team had been saying this behind the scenes before. So it's not like they said, hey, let's deliver a new message on this. They did run well the last 6 weeks of the season. They averaged 118 yards a game. One bad game there, 77 yards, but four games before that, over 100 and well over 100 in some of them. Randy Jordan was retained as the running back coach. You know, I think Pollard can be an effective back. The thing is, you know, the chances to turn the 20-yard run into a 40-yard run aren't happening there. I don't like Spears as a between-the-tackle runner. I don't think he's proven that. I do think they think that Mullings will be, you know, better, and he didn't have much of a chance. His rookie year was kind of ruined by injury. Is that a great group? No. You know,
is it a top half of the league group?
I don't think so. Maybe right in the middle. Like you said about the receiver group, you know, I'd have to go look through the league. There are probably some more disappointing groups than we think around the league. And then again, you know, that interior offensive line's got direct bearing on Cam. It's got a direct bearing on this running game. But the other thing, you know, that Saleh talked about here when talking about Love that I thought was pretty game changers, you know, and he certainly sounds like a guy that is thinking a top edge rusher can be as much of a game changer as a running back. And he's not talking who scores touchdowns. He's talking who makes a big play at a big moment. And sure sounds like, hey, David Bailey is just as capable of making a big play at a big moment as Jeremiah Love is.
Well, I mean, I could argue that a great edge player is more of, right, of a game changer than a running back.
Yeah, so he doesn't have
the ball in his hands 25 times in a game, but and again, then that's not even factoring in, again, just the reality of acquiring those two positions and how they compare in that way. It's a massive difference.
He talked right into the positional value conversation that we've been having for weeks.
Yeah, exactly. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Lots more to get into with PK. We welcome more of your questions. Keep them coming on the text line. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. 1025 The Game and Team Boxing League have teamed up for your chance to win a pair of VIP tickets as Nashville Smash takes on Phoenix Fury at Municipal Auditorium coming up Friday, April 17th. Just text the keyword FIGHT to the game text line at 615-737-1025. Ed on the text line throwing this out there. What impression do you think this staff has of Amani Hooker? Is he a good fit next to Winston? PK, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. It was a rough year for Amani Hooker this past year. How much of that is him and where he's at as a player? How much of that is just the absolute terribleness of the defense around them, for lack of a better word, at this point? You know, he's 27 years old, so he's not that old. He has gone through some injuries in his career. Not a great year from Hooker last year. How are you feeling about him heading into this next season with Saleh, his defensive scheme, and maybe that pairing together of Hooker and Winston?
He feels older than 27, doesn't he?
He does.
Based on the injuries and also based on the fact that the Titans don't have a lot of guys who've been around for a long time. So Hooker rates as one of the senior most guys, right?
Wily veteran.
Hooker's a no-nonsense guy, quality guy in the room. He did not have a good year, excuse me, and he was not – as forthcoming about not having a good year as I would have expected. Slowed down, which was the biggest thing. He's never a blazer, but seemed slower. And so I think the Titans have to be hoping that it was a slowdown in processing because of all of the terrible corner play around him as Snead disappeared and Brownlee disappeared and McCreary disappeared.
They made them disappear, by the way.
Yeah, and then they got dinged up and, you know, were really I've said it's going to be a trivia question, like the starting corners of that last game are unnameable people outside of Daryl Baker Jr. So Saleh emphasized interchangeable safeties, so Winston and Hooker are playing the same position, really. I want to see Winston cover better and run better. He was near the line of scrimmage a lot. And for a third round pick in the box safety, it doesn't do it for me. A lot of people are a lot higher on him based on what they saw last year than I was. I think he's got potential and I'm looking forward to seeing him expand. But Amani Hooker's got to be the least of their problems with all of these new stuff, and hopefully will be a glue guy that helps Flott and Taylor and the kid from Kansas City that they got and these new potential nickels and everything. And look, this whole thing is built on a much faster pass rush with four. If they've got numbers and coverage and they're getting to the quarterback, everything gets easier for Amani Hooker and everybody in the back end.
Yeah, we talked earlier this week about the, like, Kevin Byard 2020, right? Like, it was like there was a lot of coverage that year, a lot of discussion about, man, what is going on with KB? And he made some bad plays that are just inexcusable, but also he played on a defense with absolutely zero pass rush.
Yeah.
And so much more pressure. And as we have obviously seen, he was not over the hill. He looked a lot better a year later when all of a sudden they could get after the quarterback.
Yeah, Hooker's not the player Byard was, but no. a similar resurgence at his level of play is certainly, that's a good point, possible for him, surrounded by a much better level of talent, which has happened for Byard.
Let me ask you the same question that I asked Mike Herndon yesterday. Let's play this out, that the Titans draft David Bailey at number four, and your front four consists of Bailey, Simmons, John Franklin Myers, Jermaine Johnson. That's, and you know, obviously there's a rotation to that, but that's your front four.
That's a damn good four.
That's pretty good. Like, how much, when you factor in not only that, but everything else they've done on defense and via free agency, plus the coach that's now in there, how much better are we talking from last year to this year on defense?
I think, you know, significantly better. Also, I mean, I haven't looked team for team at the schedule, but I think that, you know, they're not playing the high-level schedule that they played last year. I think it's favorable defensively. And while I understand universally we're not super satisfied with what they've done on offense, I heard you when I was driving in saying, you know, maybe underrating the healthy Ridley plus Wandale plus growth of Io Manor and DK, you know, even plus the Pollard we saw at the end of the season. Not fantastic, but serviceable for sure. If they get that offensive line patched up, you know, they need to score more than 17. Now, Daboll needs to get them in the 20s. But if they score 20, this defense, I think, you know, it's reasonable to expect them keeping teams under 20. You know, and can this team win games 20-17? I think that would be a score that I could see being something this team is capable of posting on a Sunday against the more average teams on their schedule.
Well, and also, like, a lot of this discussion just gets into the argument over, like, the first-round pick, but there are other picks.
Yes.
If Bailey's there, they get Bailey. I would be willing to probably bet a reasonable sum of money that with the second or third-round pick, or both, they're going to do something to directly help Cam Ward's side of the ball. And people seem to be forgetting that sometimes with the whole, like, you have to get Love. This, you know, you can't pass that up.
I'm very impatient about receiver and high-level receiver. And I understand that, you know, it's not the best top-heavy receiver class.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't take one of these guys at four, right?
No. I think Tate would be a prime guy in a trade down scenario. But I also, and I have a video recorded that I haven't put up yet, I am really trying to come around on not being married to this. You got to run a 4-4 kind of thing. And Tate at 4-5-3, where there's some controversy about, I'm not going to spill everything I learned. Watch for this video. But I learned more about his speed and talking to some people at the owners' meetings. I would be very satisfied with Carnell Tate on this team. Not at four, no, but in a trade-down scenario. And I am very anxious for this team to finally spend. You know, you can't just keep having scenarios where you wind up in the fourth round. And I like Io Manor and DK. But you need to, and I like Femi. I like the potential of Femi Oladejo. But we said after last year, like, those guys fill it in, but you need to cap it with something in front of it. Well, there are only so many positions where you could cap it with something in front of it because you only have so many picks in front of it. That's why I feel like, you know, and I was talking about this with Braden Gall yesterday. You can only go in front of so many positions. And that's why I feel like Love is such a luxury, because I feel like you need the end to go in front of Oladejo and those guys to cap it. And you need the receiver to go in front of those guys to cap it. And if you do those two things, there's no room for Love. He was saying, on the other hand, just do the best you can everywhere, and within 2 years you get all of those things. I'm very impatient at receiver. I'm sick of waiting.
Let's head back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Adam in Portland to the program. Adam, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Robbie, man. Hey, PK, so if there's a scenario, I got two things for you. If there's a scenario where the Titans could trade back out of four, somebody loves Love and wants to jump up and get him, and you could still get somebody like Bain, would you do that? Also, for the receiver part, would you not say that Juwan Jennings would be a better fit in this offense than Calvin Ridley? I think Ridley is not quite the worker, man. Like, I would concede that he's more talented than Juwan Jennings, but I think Juwan Jennings would outwork him like 10 times.
Did you go to UT?
I didn't go to UT. I am a fan. This is coming from a homer, but I've said it and I've seen it the entire way. Back when the Vols sucked, Juwan Jennings was the only one competing in those Alabama games. Like, he wasn't ever scared of teams like that. So he's the guy that I always look at and go, he's going to outwork everybody on the field, even if he's not the best player.
Calvin Ridley works. Calvin Ridley works really hard. So, I mean, you can pump up Juwan Jennings' work ethic, but I wouldn't do it at the expense of Calvin Ridley's work ethic.
But didn't Calvin Ridley come out and say that he gave up in practice one day or didn't finish running? Like, that's on record. Like, but that's not, you're not ever going to see that with Juwan Jennings.
Well, he said, you know, he didn't finish a route or something in one specific day and one specific thing. I mean, so you're going to replace him with Juwan Jennings because Jennings would have run that one route harder than Calvin Ridley did on a frustrating day?
Well,
it's very situational and
small. The other part of this is, like, 100%. I don't know how, like Jennings hasn't landed anywhere yet, which tells me that he's asking for way too much.
Is making an assessment on him. I don't have a problem with Calvin Ridley being back. He and Cam Ward have a real feel for each other. I wouldn't have minded Juwan Jennings landing here, but in addition to Calvin Ridley, not instead of him, given what Ridley has with Ward right now.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Lots more to get to with PK.
And that means Daboll has a feel for Ridley. And I think we're all starting with, hey, let's see what Daboll likes.
You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on the Titans at 615-737-1025. Paul Kuharski back from Arizona. PK, the Super Bowl timeline, you wrote about this at paulkuharski.com the other day. So with Vegas being awarded the Super Bowl in 2029, the earliest we're looking at here in Nashville with the stadium and the Super Bowl coming would be 2030. Doesn't necessarily guarantee that it's coming in 2030, but what's your sense for what that timeline could look like for the stadium with the Super Bowl at some point? With the first season coming in 2027 for the new Nissan Stadium.
I think they'll get it in 2030. Very, very likely. And I think the Titans' feeling is, and they certainly would have liked to have gotten 2029, but they, and Burke Nihil told me this on the record, the fact that Los Angeles SoFi Stadium, a jewel, got a return in 5 years. It's there this year. And now Allegiant Stadium, Las Vegas, is getting a return in 5 years. Titans are optimistic that that means when they get it, that if they do well with it, if Nashville does well with it, which I think we all presume will happen. Yep. It's been a while since Nashville's put on an NFL event, but the draft was a raging success here. It's not the same scope. But we know Nashville can put on big events. CMA Fest every year is really well done. Nashville gets a Super Bowl, puts on a great Super Bowl. It could get in that kind of five-year cycle. Now, the 5 years might be a little fast because Washington's going to have a new stadium and they're going to get one. Chicago probably gets a one-off cold weather game. Kansas City could get a one-off cold weather game. You know, I don't know about Cleveland if they've got the logistics for it. Buffalo's certainly not getting one. But are cities like New Orleans, Miami, Tampa Bay, despite warm weather status and history of putting on really good games, going to fall behind because those stadiums are not SoFi and Allegiant and Nissan Stadium with the new bells and whistles that make them more attractive for the game day? And Nashville clearly and Las Vegas have great footprints.
Chicago's not getting one.
Chicago,
Gary,
I think,
Indiana? Everybody's, well, is that where the media hotel will be, Gary?
Well, I mean, listen.
Here, it's fun in February.
So, you know, a lot of these things are really spread out. Glendale, Arizona is not exactly in Phoenix.
No, but it's in Arizona, so at least people can, like, walk outside and not die. So, I mean, come on.
I think Chicago will get a one-off.
So, to add to this real quickly, just because I actually have talked to a couple people here recently with some knowledge, I would definitely expect – I'm with you. I think that Nashville absolutely can get into, like – one of the, like, it'll, like, what did it used to be, PK? Basically, you'd have, like, New Orleans,
Miami
always, like those were always rotating, you know, and then you have some different ones in California, stuff like that. But I think, yeah, SoFi, Vegas, Nashville, I think we're going to see somewhat steady diets of that. I also think that not only are we going to get a Final Four, but I think that that's going to be, I think there's a lot of interest in that becoming not quite what Indy is. Indy, for people who don't, you know, Indy has a Final Four again this year. I mean, it's like every 3-4 years Indy gets it, because it's just like, it just works out as an event city, you know, and also the NCAA is here. Like, you know, there's a lot of reasons, but I think Nashville might become as regular as any other non-Indy city eventually when it comes to the Final Four.
Will we get college football national championship or...
I think so, yeah. I mean, and the thing about that is you have the – right now they have the model where they have the title game being, you know, farmed out different cities. So certainly I would expect us to get that. But I think beyond that, we might – we just – like, what does it look like when they expand it? How many bowl games are involved when they expand it, right? All that stuff. I mean, it could be more regular than – the occasional title game. I just don't know what it's going to look like.
Burke Nihil, in terms of speaking of expansion, said they can add thousands to the 60, but not get to 70. So I'm thinking 64, 65. The league seems incredibly comfortable with that. Here's what can't happen. Now, Atlanta recovered from cold weather Super Bowl. We all know 99 was semi-disastrous when the Titans were there. I was right in the middle of that, and it was not good. But they've hosted, they're hosting at least their second since, in 2 years. Dallas did not recover from an ice storm Super Bowl, though I talked to a couple people from Dallas who tell me that's the most profitable Super Bowl in history. Now that's largely, because of the stadium size, but they still have,
it's a terrible place for a Super Bowl.
Well,
it's,
yeah,
not good.
The footprint terrible. They need to condense it somewhat, and they had an ice storm there and did not recover, have not recovered really from that. If we had the January 24th, 25th ice storm here, with an 18-game schedule, the average date of the Super Bowl I calculated would be February 11th. We still would have had remnants of problems. Now, it didn't hit downtown, but it wouldn't have been a great look if a huge share of Nashville area population was still without power while we were hosting the biggest party in the country for a week. So there would be a lot of prayerfulness that that kind of ice storm we get, what, every 3 years or so, wouldn't hit that year.
For sure. And again, if you're listening and you're wondering, like, what's that got to do with the Super Bowl? So it's beyond just the game. Like, obviously, the game itself would be indoors in a stadium, but there's so much that goes on around it.
Las Vegas officials, while celebrating at a press conference, said that their Super Bowl, which is, what, 2 years ago now, had over 300 events connected to the Super Bowl, and that number's only going up.
Right.
But also, Nashville doesn't need any new infrastructure connected to it in terms of convention centers, hotels, all of the event space, all of that. And the NFL might even tell you that the footprint is too good. Like, where are the teams going to be? Well, somebody would practice at Vanderbilt, and somebody would practice conceivably at the Titans facility. That's too close for a lot. You know, a team likes to be out somewhere. Somebody would, I don't know, Gaylord is too, you like to be isolated in a way. I don't know where isolated in a way is necessarily.
You're down there in Franklin. Let's head back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome Spencer to the program. Spencer, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Dan Moore situation. I'm really worried that we're going to go into the draft next year with the 9th or 10th pick, sitting there with some great receivers and other edge rushers, and there's great talent, and we're going to end up having to talk about the left tackle again. So that being said, would you all consider drafting a developmental guy in the third round with 66, just so that for year three of Cam, you could have that guy compete with Dan Moore versus kind of winding up in this situation where we're talking about left tackle all next offseason?
Joe's in favor of this, but you can't draft a guy to compete with Dan Moore in the second or third round when you need a starting center and a starting right guard. So I think you've got too much frontline stuff that you need help with. You're not in a position where you can look a year out. You have to wait until next year to look a year out.
Yeah. But my answer to that question is at 66, is an offensive tackle the best player on your board? Then you consider it. Right? And if
while
and if
leaving
that's
holes
true,
at center and guard?
Sure. I mean, if that's true, PK, I'm big on being a smart franchise that gets the best possible football players. You have so many needs. I hear what you're saying about immediate issues. You also have done some things that you apparently think could address those issues, right? I mean, my God, if you have to go interior line because you screwed up free agency so bad, then you got bigger issues than we're even discussing. So if the best player available is a tackle, first of all, if that's true at that spot, that means you got someone who could potentially start this year. Right? I mean, I don't think – that's not –
and
third
again,
round
then you're
tackle,
putting a $22 million guy on the bench.
I understand that. But you are going to have to address that.
It's your number one need for 2027.
Yeah, so that's why I was in favor of if there was someone who actually was good enough at that position at four, I was as I've said, and I've taken a lot of crap for it, I don't think you just dismiss that out of hand. It appears that that's not the case. Fine. But, no, I
who knows?
Think,
Cardinals may take 1-3.
Well, that's
you
true.
You hope the Cardinals take 1-3.
And if the smart Cardinals are going to do that, then maybe you need to look into that. Is it Maui Goa? Is that who people think if they take a tackle? Yeah.
And when I think smart, I think open, Arizona Cardinals.
Also
right.
Leave exactly. Open the possibility here of taking a later round tackle. Who, you know, look, it's not the preferred path. Odds are your left tackle is going to be a high draft pick. But, you know, depending on how they fill out this other stuff, if you see a tackle in the fifth or sixth who you say, in a year, that guy can be a contender for left tackle for us, you know, has traits, I wouldn't hesitate to make that move. For a second. Then a year from now, maybe he eases your burden or maybe he doesn't. But those are the kind of flyers you take.
One more segment with PK coming up next. More of your questions to get to on the Titans. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Swing by John Daly's, located at 1907 Division Street in Nashville this Saturday for a basketball watch party you don't want to miss. Brought to you by Good Boy Vodka. Enjoy $25 Good Boy Bucket specials. And 102.5 The Game, be on site from 5 to 7 with prizes and more. Don't miss it, only at John Daly's. PK with us, final segment of the day. One texter going back to the Dan Moore conversation says, next year you have to start thinking about replacing Latham too. No indication that he's worthy of a fifth-year option. I was encouraged by the last, I'd say, 7-8 games of the year last year for Latham. Thought he started to play better, took a turn. Now, I need that to be what he is and better than that from the jump this year. I said it last year. If you walked away from year two and you weren't pretty confident that J.C. Latham was a, you know, franchise foundational level right tackle, that's a problem. I don't know that you're confident in that right now, but I did feel better towards the last 7-8 games of the year that he started to figure some things out. And now I need to see him be ready from the jump next year.
Yeah, you need to see what Latham does this year. You don't need to start planning on replacing him yet. New coach. He had a good mindset last offseason. Then I think with the bad coaching staff, with the change of offensive line coach during the season, with the lingering hip stuff, it did, I think, settle in at the down the stretch. But on the one hand, he seems very mindful, like he knew he needed to lose weight and everything. I think he's got some pride in his game. On the other hand, I think he needs to be led. And so, you know, who's the leader of that line now? Skoronski. Look, they're counting a lot on Carmen Brasillo. How good a coach is Carmen Brasillo? If he's what he's been advertised to be, I would expect J.C. Latham is coachable for him. And if that's the case, then J.C. Latham should turn into a first-round caliber guy, or at least a quality guy.
Well, that's encouraging because they only had one of the best offensive line coaches ever previously coaching him. So,
well,
let's go to the coaching as a reason for optimism. That's exciting.
What I understand what you're saying, but I don't you think that Bill Callahan was just an anomaly, and somehow you had Titans luck there, where you had an all-time great offensive line coach come and not paying out.
Latham got better after he left.
Now they've got a young up-and-comer who everybody says is good. Are we going to presume the next good line coach is automatically going to be bad because of Titans DNA, which you argue isn't a thing?
No, PK, but what we might argue is that Bill Callahan had crappy linemen and couldn't do anything. There's a limitation to all coaching. That'd be the bigger concern, right?
Bill Callahan historically has picked good offensive linemen, and he picked J.C. Latham. Yeah. So did all of a sudden he start picking bad offensive linemen?
I don't know. I guess we're going to find out.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
A couple of quick things. First of all, YouTube chat. You guys got to get your crap together the rest of this week. Like Levis stuff. We can, like, really? We're going
to
argue about Levis.
Yeah, we're about to permaban Will Levis discussion.
but Mark on the YouTube chat is like, the Titans drafting of Cam Ward was a political optics move, which then he says, like, a shiny new toy. It's a face of the franchise, a wipe the stink off. The point is, they drafted him to be a great player. They thought, I don't know if he will be, but, like, they're drafting him to play quarterback well. That's actually the point of drafting quarterback number one overall.
Hey, we don't have a quarterback, but never mind that. Let's make a political optics move.
Yeah. Now, quickly on the text line, which has been better than the YouTube chat today, question is, are you Titans done spending this offseason? Any truth to the observation their annual cash budget is tied to the annual cap limit? Like current projected cash outlay. Plus, draft class has them close to the 2026 cap on cash spent. Cash versus cap, PK.
Who do you – I mean, never mind all that. Like, are they done spending? These people think that there's, like, a continual market of talent out there. Let me teach you about free agency. About 2 weeks into free agency, all the good players are gone. And the Titans were active early, even with secondary players, you know? They got a couple guys who are second and third string on their depth chart to flesh out the depth chart. And they did that work earlier than you usually do. But who is it that you want now? A lot of people want a Bosa, the Bosa that's free. And maybe if they fail in the draft in a bigger way than we would expect, they'd look at that guy. But they're generally not looking for old people. They want to be a young ascending team, patching in some of these guys with two-year deals while they fill in the team with this draft and the next draft and the draft after that. But people who think that the Titans are going to have another big shopping spur need to go look at what's available on the market, which ain't much in terms of people who are going to come in and help you.
Joe, how old did you guess Joey Bosa is?
Joey Bosa, gosh, I remember covering a game, Big Ten championship game, Michigan State, Ohio State, Vrabel on the losing sideline, Urban Meyer about to cry into his pizza, and I think he was a freshman, and that would have been 13, so I'm going to do 13 years later, so I'm going to do 32 years old.
He's 30. You could have told me he was 38, and I'd said, yep, sure, but he's 30.
He's only 30. He was like 17 then. He was unbelievable.
A lot of injuries.
My God. Yeah.
A lot of injuries. Two things the Titans really are shopping for is age and injury.
Fits the mold. PK, thank you for being with us. We admire your dedication to the program today.
I appreciate your admiration and find it appropriate. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your
Maybe
lock.
A little bit limited, but pretty good.
Rexro never even acknowledged the admiration.
No, he never does.
That does it for us today on the program. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.